I want you to know that we have an excellent condition, collection of our books in this library. It is really something I can say. You are privileged to be able to have all these tools with you. I cannot give a lecture like this to my students in Singapore because we simply don't have the tools that are here. I don't have them because they are not there. They're difficult to get. Some of them are out of print. And many of you are going to pastorates or to mission field, or you're going to be in places where you will have no access to theological libraries. So unless you get to use these tools now, you may never have an opportunity to familiarize yourself with what is necessary. So I hope that the purpose of this will be to help you familiarize yourself with the tools so that you will know what helps you best. And then when you see these within the reach of your budget, perhaps you should buy them. For instance, I'll tell you why. Most students I know buy Englishman's Greek. Now, I would much rather that you save your money and buy Moulton and Gaydon. So if you have Englishman's Greek, try to palm it off to someone else whose Greek may be very weak, and try to get yourself a copy of Moulton and Gaydon. It is necessary for you to be wise in your budgeting, because there are times when you will need to have books with you. This is a public lecture. Come in if you like. I'm talking about Greek tools. Okay? Now, I want to show you how to use these books, because this is another problem. I find if I ask someone, do you know Moulton and Gaydon? Yes, I know. Have you used it? Occasionally. Now, knowing that a tool is available is not an asset. You must know how to use that tool. Now, for instance, most students know that there is Arnim Gingrich, Thayer's, Moulton and Milligan, and other tools. But invariably, you just go for Arnim Gingrich and think, well, that's sufficient. Okay, what is the distinctiveness of each? Now, perhaps you come across an exegetical problem. You need to know which type of lexicon you need to use. You need to have a finer understanding of the differences between each. So we're going to do a check run on some of these to show you the layout of the different articles. I want to therefore say not only how important the tools are, but how you can use them for what purposes. Now let's start with the analytical. Okay. It's anonymous. If you noticed, I'm always suspicious of anonymous books. The writer doesn't take credit for the errors as well. And there are some errors here, but whatever errors there are in this are really not that many. So I don't want to exaggerate the problem. But there is a good grammar summary at the beginning of this. And let's do a check run on euangelizo. I proclaim the gospel. Now, this is a good word to do a check run. Why? Because the middle euangelizomai and the active euangelizo are found in various places. Now, I've gone through this myself. All the euangelizo forms here are correctly passed in the analytical. Now, what I see is that after the forms, then you have euangelion. You have to register that the verb is listed usually under the noun form, the cognate form. And the write-up on euangelizo is correct as it stands, but it does not help you in detailed exegesis, which brings me to the point that if you are simply interested in knowing what a form is, if you are stuck on a form and it's taking you 15 minutes and you are not getting anywhere, go for the analytical to give you the clue. But on the finer distinction between the various possible meanings, don't take the analytical treatment. Why? Well, simply because that you need more than what is given here. Just like the dictionary at the back of the UBS edition of the New Testament, that is helpful simply to help you to translate, but not for exegesis. Okay? You will find, if you want to buy a book, that nowadays it is not really necessary to have an analytical. There are many linguistic analysis of the New Testament that would make this obsolete. Now, for instance, Hans, someone has Hans, passing guide. Okay, and I have used the Zoic Grosvenor's linguistic analysis. If you have Hand or you have Zerwig Grosvenor or a few other standard linguistic guides that bring you through the New Testament word by word, chapter by chapter, you won't need this at all. Okay. Again, if you own an analytical, try to trade it off for Hand or for some other passing guide. You shouldn't really need the analytical. Now, I just put it behind me and finish, okay? Arnon Gingrich, who has that? Number two. Now, I'd like to look at Arnon Gingrich together with Thayer. Thayer, please, we'll leave it there. Moulton and Milligan. Okay, fine. Arnon Gingrich is a translation of Walter Bauer, and it is keyed to Blas de Brunner grammar. That is to say, there are certain points of grammar which are simply referred to by section and page. Not page, but just by section. So if you don't have Blas de Brunner, sometimes you cannot get the best use out of Arnon Gingrich. Okay? If you have Blas and Brunner, don't sell it. It's an excellent grammar. It's the standard grammar used on the continent today. Still used. They don't use Dane and Manti there. Especially helpful in Arnon Gingrich are the etymological studies. But remember that etymology does not determine the meaning of a word, rather the context does. So as you are told in a treatment of an article, like Evangelizo, you don't go by the history of the word. If it says that in the classical Greek it means this, or in certain periods, nearer the club, in literary coine, for instance, it means that. Don't go by that. A lexicon simply maps out the possible meanings. Now, I know that Arnon Gingrich does give you verse references, so that if you look through the article on Evangelizo, so you might just come across Mark whatever passage you are looking for. Take that as one man's opinion, and he could be wrong. Usually he's right. But that's not the final word, you know, on the meaning. Be prepared to disagree with a lexicographer if necessary. I was going to do a little bit more work here, but I think what I'll have to do is just talk about it, because I want to cover 28 books within the next half an hour. That means 1 minute for each book. It's really too brief. Now, the problem with using Arnon Gingrich is that you need to be familiar with abbreviations, especially abbreviations of apocryphal and pseudepigraphic works. For instance, if you see WISD, full stop, you must register that it is the Wisdom of Solomon in the Old Testament Apocrypha. But usually, the layout of terms here in Arnon Gingrich is based on, the word usage. So, I think I just cannot bypass its step. I think if I want to explain, I must tell you a little bit more. Just hold on. Evangelizo. Yes, you have the first meaning is the generic meaning You won't get little teeny. That means I preached the gospel to someone. And then the second meaning is the meaning of the word with reference to the proclamation of a divine message of salvation. So sometimes you find that using unangenged is confusing because whereas you want to know what does it mean in the active voice, what does it mean in the middle voice, or if there's a passive voice, you won't find it here. But it is already segregated for you by the use of the word with in a particular context. So unangenged is not that helpful when you want to go for some direct basic meaning. You should go for Thayer if you want to have that kind of treatment. Now, Thayer's lexicon is translated from C.C. Willibald Grimm's book, and it uses the Septuagint and the Old Testament Apocrypha. It is an outstanding usage of the Apocrypha. You'll find that Uninginric gives also the same thing. They use Septuagint and the early Christian literature, particularly the inscription and the ostraca. Now, if you know what those are, it is a complete treatment of Koine, vernacular Koine Greek. But Thayer will not only give you the reference, but sometimes it will give you short quotations of the particular section it comes from. If you check the arrangement on Euangelizo, you see that Thayer's arrangement is quite easy to use. It says, in the active, it means, and then it gives you possible meanings. As a deponent middle, it means all this, and so forth. I have a Thayer's lexicon, which I was tempted to give away when I got my own in Gingrich, but I'm glad I didn't, because it had certain features which the other didn't have. Now, at the end of Thayer's article, there are also some very helpful notes. For instance, at the end of Euangelizo, it says COMP in capitals. That means the compounded forms, and you have pro euangelizomai. Pro, preposition, with euangelizomai. So it gives you some of these helps. But more helpful is the distinction between synonyms. Quite often at the end of a Thayer article, you would have the synonyms explained. If you check, for instance, allos and heteros, you find that you don't need to have trench or to have some other dictionary of synonyms. Thayer's would do the job for you. Okay. Now, Moulton and Milligan uses the papyri in the most helpful way of all three. If you are interested in papyri, papyrological evidence as well as ostraca evidence. Incidentally, the papyri are not mentioned in Thayer's. There's an excellent introduction in Moulton and Milligan on the importance of the papyri for beginners. Now, if you do have some time and you really want something different to read, just read the introduction of Moulton and Milligan, and you have an idea now that papyri is not just something interesting but something important. Okay, it's addressed to people like you who need to know how important and why it is important. Now, if you look at Euangelizo in Moulton and Milligan, you can see that there's a different use here. Incidentally, this is being revised, so don't buy a Moulton and Milligan unless you find a good second-hand one. Macquarie University in Australia is going through a revision of this, and one of my friends, we started together under F.F. Bruce, is the editor of the revised Moulton and Milligan.
You should get the old one.
Well, if you can get the old one at a cheap price, get it. But don't buy a new Moulton and Milligan. Okay? Until the new
The revision is coming.
I was with you. I thought maybe there was something wrong with it. We shouldn't buy it.
No. Okay, now, What Moulton and Milligan does is, it's very helpful that it gives you like a dictionary of quotations. Now, if you want to see how euangelizomai is used in the papyri or used in some other reference, they will give you the Greek, and very often they will translate the Greek as well. Okay, so it's good for illustrative purposes. But I think for your use, I would say keep Thayer's handy and Molten and Unendingric as well. Vines. Who has vines? Number 5. Vine's Expository Dictionary, F.F. Bruce has a foreword here in which he says there's no book just like Vine's. It's similar to Kittle, except it is like a poor man's edition of Kittle's. I don't like to use Vine because he uses transliterations. I like to see the Greek word as it is. But it's not too bad at Hans. In a way that I feel Hans Passing Guide would be much... No, I'm sorry, I'm not referring to Hans. I'm referring to some other book now. Vine uses the transliteration, but the Greek word is by the side. Not always, though. Now, if you check the article on Alos, and see whether it distinguishes between Alos and Heteros, there's a particular problem here, by the way. Most 19th century books would say that there is a distinction. Alos shows that it is other of the same kind. Heteros shows a qualitative difference, Alos of a different kind. But nowadays, if you pick up a commentary, you will see that, for instance, the comment in Galatians 2 about another gospel which is not another. There's a tendency to say, well, this distinction was not used at all in the New Testament period. Which is very confusing for students, I'm sure, because they don't know which one to believe. They have, when there's a dispute about meaning, they will be able usually to find a book that supports both views. And then you have the problem of deciding which one to trust. My policy here is that if there is a distinction, then let's see if this distinction can be used at all. If the context does not support the use of this distinction, then it's better not to press it too far. But if there is a built-in distinction in a pair of words like alos and heteros, and the context supports that, it is almost a confirmation that this distinction to me is being used. But as I told you in the class, there's an interplay between word and its meaning all the time that is sometimes difficult to decide which goes first, the cart or the horse. Right? A.T. Robertson, number 6. Who has that? I'm not referring to grammar, but I'm referring to the history. Oh, sorry, I'm referring to historical grammar.
How does that line compare with Colin Brown?
When I come to Colin Brown, okay, we will treat that. Now, this is excellent. It's too bad that the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary today is a liberal seminary. There is a pamphlet stating how it became liberal, but it's too bad that the work of Robertson today is not being carried on in the same spirit. Part one of the introduction is the best I have read of any books on the nature of the Greek, of New Testament Greek as a language. If you really want to know what the Greek, what vernacular Koine Greek is, read Robertson. There is a lot to read and there is too little time. And the problem is not with Robertson but with us. Okay, some people say he's verbose and all that. But I don't think he uses words unnecessarily. Like I think some of the Puritans use words unnecessary. But he's solid here. I checked on the use of Actaeon's art, kind of action, pages 2823 following, and it's a good, clear section. Some of you who have been asking me, is there anything written on verbal action, as I've been describing in the class? Punctilia, linear. Well, I found that Robertson is virtually what I've been teaching you, although I wasn't aware that it was there. So, don't give up your Robertsons. You find that there is a considerable carefulness in the way he does his work. But what bothers me is on italics pages 9 to 12, where he has a number of passing errors. Now, I wish that the publisher would have incorporated these passing errors here. The problem that I have is whenever I've not used this, but if I should be looking up a word, I'm not sure if there's any error. And I have to look through and decide now which word it is. One way is to try and go from the errors to the text and try to correct it yourself. But there's no way of doing it. It's like hunting for a needle in a haystack. Okay? Because you don't know where the word is wrong. Okay? So for that reason, I feel that it has taken a lot of the usefulness of the book away. And the problem with Han is that after using it, you still need to go to the lexicon.
Yeah.
Okay, it just gives you the root, but doesn't give you the meaning. Okay. Number 8, Septuagint by Rams. This is the 9th edition by the Württembergische Bible Society. It is an essential tool for me. If you can speak about books that are sine qua non, without which you cannot do without. Books within arm's reach. Rahls is spelled R-A-H-L-F-S. Okay? This would be one of them. Now, I use this occasionally. Sorry, you may need to use it occasionally, but I use it very frequently. Why? Because I have a special interest in Old Testament quotations. Sometimes when you are translating, you know that something is quoted from the Old Testament, and then you stop there. You just say, okay, it's good. But I like to go back and check the Old Testament quotation. Now, you need to watch that the Septuagint here follows a different arrangement of books. The Old Testament Apocrypha is incorporated into this. Okay, so you may have some trouble trying to find your way around. If you're not aware of strange-looking names here, which are actually the Old Testament Apocrypha.
That's a question?
Yes, question?
I just noticed that the Septuagint is out in one volume now. That's the current reformer still here.
Must be a huge volume.
Yeah, very expensive. Though. It's only like $20.
Thank you.
That's cheap.
Well,
did that have to come out of print? I checked on it last year.
I see. Okay. I don't like huge books. My A.T. Robertson is in danger of falling apart. Sorry for grammar, because after long years, when the spine doesn't hold up, and you have to keep on them. I don't lend out my thick volumes, because invariably something happens to them. Neither do I lend out paperbacks. No matter how soft I may feel towards a person's needs. Okay, Suter's Greek New Testament, number 9. Suter explains, gives an introduction in Latin. If you know Latin, fine. In the introduction, he says that it follows the work of Tischendorf. Now, why am I describing Suter to you? It is easier to use the critical apparatus in Suter than in Nestle. Nestle's apparatus is excellent, but it's full of abbreviations. I know of a seminary that gives a course, just a one credit course, on how to read Nestle's textual critical apparatus. Okay? I meant to pass it around. So, it's good. I did a check run on Mark 1:1, Hui U Se U. You know, there's a textual problem on the Son of God reference there, and it has an excellent layout, very clear layout, avoiding certain of the abbreviations that we find in Nestle.
Okay.
I
think I heard of UBS Critical. Is it easy to read?
Oh, the UBS Critical is a highly subjective one. I would say that for the most part, when I want to check on the to do a proper study of a variant reading, I never use the UBS group apparatus, unless I see it there. Most of the time, it is there, but there are a few times when I want to look for a certain variant reading, I can't find that. Because the list of variant readings given in the UBS edition is a selective one. Nestle.
Yeah, it's a very small one.
This is a standard and worldwide volume. In fact, the UBS edition has come in heavily on for criticism by in many of the learned journals, showing that some of the decisions reached by the committee arbitrary. Nestle is very helpful, but you have to get used to the abbreviations. It's beautifully printed. I have a 23rd edition, but the 26th edition of Nestle is easier on the eye. Now, there is a need to use this together with your translation because, let me see, sometimes on a variant reading, like we were looking at in Mark 1:1, I did a check run on this, you will find that the evidence given in Sutta or in the British and Foreign Bible Society edition, which is a blue cover, cloth-bound cover, or the UBS edition, is not full. Usually, Nestle has the most complete set of variant readings. 11. Now, those of you who have another class you must go to, you can be excused. But I'll carry on for a little while. The Reader's Bible, I can just say very quickly what it is. Now, those of you who use the King James Version, you'll find the Reader's Bible an excellent tool. I've always been unhappy with the verse arrangement. It just fractures your understanding of a passage when you are not able to see the paragraph. Now, the Reader's Bible takes the King James text, removes the archaism. It is like a King James 2, except I think it is done better than the King James 2. Beautifully printed with paragraph headings. But beware of the introductions. The Pentateuch, for instance, uses the introduction to this, uses the JEDP theory. And the Pauline epistles mention that the Deutero-Pauline writings are 1st and 2nd Timothy and Titus. Okay, but how many would like to take a look at that? I want to say very quickly to you, sorry for chasing up on other users. They don't mind. The number 12, the way. Okay. Now this is an example of something very unfortunate. I think it's unfortunate and terrible that Campus Life, Youth for Christ, should include the Apocrypha with the Bible as a gesture to the Catholics here. I think it takes the wind out of the whole thrust of our argument against the Apocrypha as the basis of the Bible, because it seems it's a beautifully done work, you know, with pictures and all that, using the Living Bible. But generally speaking, I don't find the Living Bible too bad. There are occasions when by comparison, I find it has beautifully paraphrased certain passages. But I think the decision to print the Apocrypha with the name of Youth for Christ on the title page is an unfortunate one. Okay. Catholic Biblical Encyclopedia. I don't know whether you avoid Catholic books instinctively or not, but you will find that the Catholics do better exegesis than liberal Protestants. I looked up the article on original sin, on virgin birth, and I found that there is a restraint on injecting Catholic ideas, and there is an affirmation of original sin or virgin birth in a book like this. For instance, on the virgin birth, I expect some mention of the Immaculate Conception of Mary, but nothing is said about that. And, well, I hope that one day you buy this, because you don't have to read a lot like you have to do in Hastings, Dictionary of the Bible, but you get solid biblical stuff here in this publication. There are two volumes. New Bible Dictionary. That is my sine qua non. Okay, I use it all the time. It's dependable, it's evangelical, and it has come out in an illustrated edition. Do we have that in the library? Okay, it's a three-volume illustrated Bible dictionary. Excellent, if you can afford it. But I think most of you would probably have to wrangle it by persuading your church librarian to include that in your church library. But I've enjoyed the revision of that. The New Bible Dictionary I use specially for word studies. Now, for instance, if you are doing a study of Gospel, Evangelion, okay, you have done your commentary reading, or sometimes you go to the commentary, you want help on a particular word, and you don't get that help. Now, if it is something having to do with a word used in the text, you'll find New Bible Dictionary will come to your help very readily. Okay? Hastings. Hastings gives five times the substance of New Bible Dictionary, and it is full. I like Hastings because it gives me a representative opinion of a representative pre-20th century liberal opinion on the subject. I find Hastings more usable than some of the current commentaries, liberal commentaries. For instance, I don't have a lot of money, and I don't want to buy liberal commentaries. I would rather buy Hastings as a means of checking up on what the other side is saying than some of the recent commentaries, because the work done at the stage when Hastings' dictionary was being produced was solid. It didn't include all the very faddish stuff that has been coming out, and that really, like, if you take for instance John McNeill's commentary on Romans, you find that the whole commentary is virtually useless once you cue in to what he's trying to do. He's doing something which just chops up Romans to beyond recognition. I regretted buying that commentary.
It's pretty much redaction criticism.
Yes, Hastings, you would possibly be able to find in some second-hand book store. I got my Hastings set of 5 volumes for $5. Sometimes people sell it by weight. Hatch and Redpath. Hatch and Redpath is excellent. Let me just pass it around, shall I? Just looking at it. It's excellent. I looked at the article on Hui Osteu, and I noticed that it sets out very clearly in 19 pages all the uses of this phrase in the Old Testament. Now, at the end of each article, you find that the Greek Old Testament versions, like the Aquilinic, the Simicon versions, are also represented. Now, I looked under Hui Osteos, as well as under Evangelizein, which was excellent. Now, why do you want to use Hatch and Redpath? When you want to do a word study, for instance, remember what I said, that Mark uses Evangelion in Mark 1:1 for the first time with reference to the written gospel. And that the basis for this is the Septuagintal use of Evangelizomai. Okay, the noun form is not found in the Old Testament, but the verb form is. Now, when you make a conclusion like this and you want to double check on it, the only way you can really find is to go through a concordance on the Septuagint.
What do you see as the value of the point by Marsh?
Well, if I have my money, I'd rather save for Hatch and Redpath. But I don't know how far you will go. I'm just assuming that you are all highly motivated. That being the case, then I'm trying to help you to avoid making the same mistakes I did. I'm giving up my analytical, my Englishman's Greek, and books which, in my haste, I bought and realized that I bought something else.
Is that a concordance of the Septuagint?
Yes, okay. That is. Moulton and Gaydon. This is a sine qua non. And it is the equivalent of Lisowski's and Mendelkern's for Hebrew. Now, if you have not known what Lisowski is, let me just lay it out for you to see. It is an exhaustive concordance of the words found in the Old Testament, giving the quotation itself in Hebrew. Moulton and Gaydon does this for Greek. Now, why is this better than English and Greek? Because I find it cuts down my time. If I'm checking on the use of a word in English and Greek, invariably I have to turn to my Greek Testament. Whereas I have it all set out here. Now, if we do a check run on Phuiosteu, page 966 of Moulton and Gaydon, now, you see that there are certain things which are good about it. At the beginning of the article, you can just bend over and take a look, it takes combinations. Now, this is answering some of the objections of James Barr in Semantics of Biblical Language, and is incorporating already in this form what linguistics scholars are trying to say, that the problem with PDMT, Kittles, and with Young's analytical, is that it is fixated to words. You know, that's a lexical approach to things. Whereas one must be aware that if we want to ask, what does Huios Theou, Son of God, mean, you don't take Huios by itself and Theos by itself and just combine two sets of meaning. And also, there is no case of a totality transfer, where all the meaning that you can find in a certain passage becomes transferred to another use of that word. Now, what you have here, as you see in the combinations given, is on the first one, Huios Theou. And if you look at the usage here, you find that in small words, you will see the combinations noted. So all you need to do is just look for number one, and then you can read off how it is used. You can do a usus loquendi study very quickly doing Moulton and Gaydon.
Would they get into semantic field at all with this?
They don't go into this overtly. It's just laying out the evidence.
How do you know when there's a combination like that?
Oh, they will tell you.
Under Huios? Under the first one?
Yes. If you look under Huios, usually they would give. Sometimes they don't.
This would have six combinations.
Yes, that's right. You have Son of the Highest, Son of the Blessed One, Son of Man, Son of Abraham, Son of David, Son of God the Father, Son of Destruction, Son of Gehenna, Son of the Devil. Okay, the combinations are very helpful. Okay, I'll pass it over to this side. Take a look. Number 18. I can't read my own handwriting. Englishman's Greek, yes. It's good for those who have forgotten Greek. And
oops.
I did a check run on Huios Theou. The problem with this is that there is no combination here, and you have to look through all the occurrences of Huios before you came up with what you want. And so in that sense, it is really not good. I'll just show you, so you can look. You can see I'm not just talking off the top of my head. Okay? Huios. Okay, you have all these pages on Huios. And not too many, too.
And yet, even though it doesn't have a phrase, it wouldn't be good for a rapid scanning of usage in English language if you want to quickly have your shelf of a word. Just like you use your inner limit, you said.
Alright, if you want it for that purpose, fine. But I have little use for this method myself.
John, you're more dry than I am.
Lisowski was the same for Hebrew.
Lisowski is not the same as Englishman's Greek. That's Englishman's Hebrew. Lisowski's and Mendelkern is the equivalent of Moulton and Gaydon.
Right. They have the combination.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. I find...
Yes. Yeah.
Lamb McLean and Dr. French would have more of that than Lukowski, would you say?
Sure, yeah, it's a much bigger book.
And it more.
Yeah.
So Lukowski's more the individual word-by-word arrangement. Although the Mandelkern doesn't have the point.
Because it's difficult. I find Lukowski's hard to use because it's all crowded. But I suppose
it's handwritten.
And handwritten, too. You can't really have everything, I suppose. Pseudepigrapher, R. H. Charles, apocrypha and pseudepigrapher.
What's that, 19?
Yeah.
All right. Now, I used my Lenski's commentary, my set of Lenski's, until I got tired of it, and I gave my entire set of Lenski in return for the two volume of R. H. Charles. Now, why? Why did I do that?
Please tell me.
I like this because it is a critical work on the apocrypha and pseudepigrapha. The text is given in translation plus notes on the text. Now I have used Edgar J. Goodspeed's apocrypha, and you can find combinations of this elsewhere. But what I need is a critical study of the text. Now, if you check, for instance, Manna in the Septuagint. Manna is called Athos Apuranu, bread from heaven. Okay? And the reference is Wisdom 1620. Now, if you want to see exactly what is used, then you can check volume 1562 of this book. And you have Wisdom 1620. Now it reads, Instead whereof thou gavest thy people angels food to eat, and bread ready for use, didst thou provide from heaven without their toil. Okay? Bread ready for use, didst thou provide from heaven without their toil. So in our study of feeding the 5,000 and its link, for instance, with the manna incident, we can get useful materials. I find that in my exegetical notebook, if I quote Wisdom 1620 and leave it like that, it means nothing to me. But if I can say Wisdom 1620 and copy out the verse itself, given time, of course, that particular note becomes more useful to me later on.
So you're using this to get
direct quotation.
Direct quotes and the finer shades of particular words used in other literature.
Yes. Okay, number 20 now. Leon Dufour. This is a French work and it's Roman Catholic. But I did a check run on propitiatory and expiate and noticed that they come down very strongly on what I would consider the biblical view. Okay? It's helpful. It is not as full as Catholic Biblical Encyclopedia, but it's helpful because it gives you solid studies on that. You find the references. What I don't like is the transliterations. Okay, but if you cannot afford to buy a Catholic Biblical dictionary, this would be the next choice. Number 21, TDNP. F.F. Bruce says that there is a veritable mine of information in this. It uses German scholarship thoroughly. And I notice that Bromley, who was a translator, says that F.F. Bruce not only proofread his English, but corrected the German original where it was wrong. Now, you may not be aware, but TDNT is available in three languages, German, English, and Italian. Of course, we don't read Italian. Used to you. Now, what is the usefulness of TDNT? Word study. Especially etymology. If you find reading Uneingingrik or some other treatment that gives that this is the rabbinic use of it, this is the use in the synoptics, this is the use in Paul, If you find that the explanation is too brief, go to TDMT, because they often have full paragraphs. If you check the paragraph on Huiyao's, volume 8, 334, following, you find that the treatment is very well done. Now, Colin Brown. Colin Brown, I met him at Trinity College in Bristol, UK, and he virtually lived in the library during the few years he did this work. I saw the table that he had and his manuscript on as he was preparing it's known as Colin Brown because the name is very hard to remember. New International Dictionary of New Testament Theology. This is a translation of a German work again. Now, what is it good for? Whereas TDNT is good for word study, for linguistic information, Colin Brown would help you on the theological information. Now, I know there's an overlap between the two, but Colin Brown's specific orientation is on theological study, and also he has taken into account linguistic approach using transformational grammar. I compared the article on Artos bread between TDNT and Colin Brown and found Colin Brown better. But you've got to be careful. Colin Brown occasionally uses liberal works. The liberal works which he uses, I found, were non-objectionable on the particular passage I checked on. However, I feel that there's a problem sometimes when you take a quotation that is non-objectionable and use it, because if you take it in the way originally intended by the writer, it may come up with a different meaning. So that's the problem I have with Colin Brown. Yes.
Could I ask two questions on that? One is, if the translation, is the German word, is it, how evangelical is it? People ask
okay,
that
yes.
A lot, and also was the original German evangelical?
No, the original German was not evangelical. Colin Brown did a translation and revision, and I think a lot of it is revision. He does this in a different way, say, from Bromley. Bromley was virtually just translating faithfully what the in TDMT, what the original says. But Colin Brown has his own notes. He indicates where he's inserting those notes. So I would tell people in those cases that where Colin Brown makes his own initials, you can depend on it. Most of it would be evangelical. Okay, but where he's simply translating, it could be either way.
The same two then are complementary.
Yes, TDNT for the linguistics, not linguistics, for the word study and exegetical insights. Colin Brown would help you more in the face of biblical theology.
What about the brevity of Colin Brown as opposed to the
great
amount of...
Yes, certainly TDNT is more helpful than Colin Brown in that way.
But yet, would you say it's easier to use in that it's... You don't have to wade through so much material.
Certainly it's easier to use. But there are some times when you want to read a lot, and sometimes you want to read a little. So, it depends.
Yes. Some of them are fixated on words, and the word is meant to feel.
No, Colin Brown is not fixated on words. He specifically mentions that he has taken note of James Barr's approach and utilizes it in his work here. Did I answer your question?
Well, I was just going to ask that the term transformational grammar, is that the Noam Chomsky translation?
Yes.
But
not strictly Noam Chomsky. I think we use it more in the sense that neither. Using neither takes the term.
Because I know that that's somewhat been discredited, at least.
Yes, I'm not referring to Chomsky. But I think neither rehabilitates this. And in fact, all the modern Greek New Testaments use the principle of dynamic equivalence, which is basically transformational grammar.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes. Speaking from a pastoral viewpoint, which of those two sets would you recommend if it's either or?
I would recommend Colin Brown.
Yeah.
and then I would look out. I would look out for any announcements of special sales of TBNT in Puritan and Reformed or in some other distributor. Or maybe a pastor who has died and whose library is not being used in any way, whose widow is willing to give free, I mean gratis. Well, I got some books that way, incidentally. Some of my books came from the library of Dr. McPherson, who was pastor of the Church of the Open Door. Number 23, A.T. Robertson's Word Pictures. If you can buy this anywhere, grab it. Now, I would say of all the studies, Kenneth West, Vincent's, and so forth, I like Robertson's best. Why? Robertson has a fairly advanced approach to Greek exegesis. A.T. Robertson's Word Pictures in the New Testament. He mentions on page 9 that he calls these volumes Word Pictures for the obvious reason that the language was originally purely pictographic. Now, that already tells you something of his Gestalt approach. Approach on words as form rather than as just a linguistic, rather as words which had certain meanings through a certain developmental history, but without actually using the word linguistics. Robertson is already taking into account many of what Barr was the same much later. Now he goes through, what I like about this, he goes through the books systematically. If you're having a problem with your Mark exegetical notebook, you might want to just turn to Mark. I don't encourage you to copy everything from him, but you don't have to hunt all the commentaries. He has notes on important words right there for you. Okay? It's a very systematic treatment. I don't know whether it's in print or out of print. Highly recommend it. Vincent's Word Studies goes systematically through the books too, but I don't recommend it. If I had to choose between Robertson or Vincent, I would rather have Robertson. Why? Because Vincent is brief in the first place. Now, Robertson... well, Vincent is good. If someone gives you a copy of Vincent, don't pass it up. But you can see how brief it is sometimes. I would rather have something like this that will tell you more. Okay, now, Kenneth West. I'm coming to the end now. Word Studies in the Greek New Testament. This is meant for English students with a minimum of Greek. It is recommended only to those who have forgotten their Greek. Or it can even be recommended to a person who doesn't know Greek, but who simply has a knowledge of the alphabet. I got a phone, for instance, a few nights ago by a lady in the area. I'm leading a Bible study in Mark. What books would you recommend? Well, she is a highly motivated person. She has Kenneth West, she says. So I said, well, stick on to your Kenneth West, because he takes into consideration the needs of those who don't understand Greek thoroughly. Okay? Maybe some of you will come one day to... you will come down to the level You have to use with rather than rather. 26. Henneker. New Testament Apocrypha. No. If you have N.R. James, New Testament Apocrypha, and you can change it for Henneker, do so. Henneker is a more up-to-date and a better version of the New Testament Apocrypha. It has bibliography on that. Most of the time when a person checks up on the New Testament Apocrypha, it's having to do with some research purpose. So for that reason, Henneker, with its bibliographic references, is helpful. It is good for an understanding, especially of the literary genre of the New Testament. Remember I told you there are four literary genres: Gospels, Acts, Epistles, Apocalypse. Now, we have only one Acts in the New Testament, but if you look into the New Testament and the Apocrypha, you see a series of Acts here, and you can understand better how to treat Acts. Acts of Paul and Thecla, for instance. This is volume 1, which doesn't have the Acts version. This is a multiple volume series.
Volume 2.
Oh, that's good. I was going to tell you something on Acts. Okay, just hold on. Yes, the Acts of John, Acts of Peter, the Acts of Paul, Acts of Andrew, Acts of Thomas. Okay, all of these are familiar to us. But it shows you that the Acts was an established literary genre in New Testament times. Okay? And if you notice the Apocalypses, also you have the same treatment here. But all the four forms, the most number of apocryphal New Testament apocryphal works are in the area of Gospels.
Okay. So you would take Charles over there?
I would take Henneker over M.R. James.
James.
No, Charles is Old Testament apocryphal.
Okay, okay.
Okay, this is different. Straight Bellevue. How many read German? You may still want to get someone. I saw some time ago a reference to an English translation of Straight Bilderbank, but I can't lay my hand on that. We have the German work here. Now, the whole area of Jewish writings needs to be explored. Exegesis does not mean just looking at the New Testament and the Old Testament. For you to do a proper exegesis, you need to sometimes refer to Jewish writings. Now, there are two types of Jewish writings that you find, that you will go to most often. The Targumic writings. Now, the Targums were the commentaries on the biblical writings. And that is what Strick and Bilevet does. The Mishnaic, M-I-S-H-N-A-I-C, writings, will tell you something about a custom, you know, something that is not linked to a particular passage in the scriptures, but having to do with a custom of the Jews. I want to illustrate here by doing a check run here. Well, if we take Mark, for instance, in Strick and Bilderbank. This isn't the Mark volume, but you will find that the arrangement is good, but unfortunately you don't read German. Eh? It will take it in the order of the biblical book. Like, for instance, you have Romans 9:22, okay, and then the Greek word is used. And followed by the Greek word would be quotations in rabbinic writings on this verse. You know what I'm referring to? So if you want to say, now what are the parallel ideas in Jewish writing on a particular verse? Romans 9:22, for instance, skua orges, the vessel of wrath. Okay, is there a similar use of this term in the Jewish writing? And you can find the reference to this in strict in Bilderbank. If you don't understand the German, sometimes you can still make out by seeing the reference. For instance, Greek and Hebrew is used, plus abbreviations of words. For instance, if you don't understand German, you can still see that Isaiah is J-E-S, Yesiah, okay? And J-E-R is Jeremiah. Okay. But what is more important, you will see Berakot, 8, okay? Ikhaber and both, you won't understand the German, but it will go on to say, well, in Midrash Psalm 3, section 3, you can take this and check with the Targum. But if you understood German, the translation of that particular quotation is right there. But now I want to talk about the Mishnah, Dendi's Mishnah. Sometimes commentaries cite Mishnah references. For instance, Cranfield, page 357, mentions in the cleansing of the temple incident, the sale of animals within the precincts of the temple, particularly within the court of the Gentiles. And the evidence he gives is Mishneh Shekinah, chapter 4, 7 to 8. Now, if we check Dendi, you see that he would give us the reference. Let me see. Shekinah. I meant to take the page number here, but it's not here. You have to sometimes get used to the references. I had another reference which I could use. There's another reference from Berakot, which I will use now. I'm sorry. You remember when Jesus Christ took the children on his lap and blessed them? Okay, there's a reference to Berakot, chapter 1, on page 3 of Dendi. And then you have here the rabbinic opinion concerning the Shema. Now, the Shema was a special blessing that we think Jesus pronounced at that time. Okay, what was the Shema? Shema, what was the text of it? And what was the use made of the Shema? Okay, the Mishnah here will help you. It's on page 3 of Dendi. Okay, I think that is all I want to say. I've gone through too much. Oh yes, I just want to point out in this one, Dr. McCrae has quite a number of articles. Yeah, in Merrill Tennis, Zondervan Pictorial and Encyclopedia of the Bible. I don't use this as much because I have the Illustrated Bible Dictionary, which I find more helpful than this because, I've used New Bible Dictionary for a number of years, and you get to like a certain dictionary better than another. But I'm sure that this would also be helpful. But I find that the articles here sometimes do not give you what you need for research purposes. This would be excellent for the layman. Okay?
Would it be similar to the New ISB?
I can't say very much because I seldom use ISB. I know it's a very popular
book. I mean, the New ISB, they're coming out with.
Yes, I don't know what to say about it because I'm not used to it. Any questions?
Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
That's all.